powers. He stands facing beings. He, the herdsman, after bringing forth all worlds, reabsorbs them at the end of time. Om Namah Shivaya. So then, shifting to a talk I sometimes give on this area, let's look for a moment at the Saivasiddhanta concept of the world, which is referred to as Maya or Mayai, Tamil word. In the beginning of Gurudeva's book, Dancing with Shiva, he describes our experience of the world in this way. We are immortal souls living and growing in the great school of earthly experience in which we have lived many lives. So it's a school. In Yogaswami's words of our master, there are two statements that beautifully echo Gurudeva's thoughts. The first is, the world is a training school. Some are in kindergarten, some are in the BA class. The second is, the world is an ashram, a training ground for the achievement of freedom. Each one does his part according to his own measure. There is nothing that is evil. The point that both Gurudeva and Yogaswami are making is that we need to look at the world as an ashram, a training school for spiritual advancement. Another view of the world, of Maya, held by some Hindus, is the perspective that the world is an illusion. This is the view that for spiritual progress to occur, the world must simply be renounced. For advanced renunciate monastics, this can be a helpful perspective. But for the rest of Hindu humanity, it is definitely not a helpful perspective, as it keeps us from engaging in the world with a positive spiritual attitude toward it. Looking at the world as illusion is like a schoolboy or girl looking at school as an illusion. He or she will definitely miss the value of the experience. So that's the point it's leading up to, that it's fine to, for the world to look a little transparent now and then, but we don't want to think that it's not important. It's through positive interaction in the world that we spiritually mature, not by dropping out of the world. So I like to say, you know, if you go live in a cave prematurely, you won't make any spiritual progress at all. You know, it has to be the right time to be a cave dweller. You know, for most of us, it's not the right time. So we need to engage positively in the world, interact with people, and in doing so, that's where the spiritual progress comes from. The Thirukkural has a chapter on Nilayamai, impermanence of all things. The chapter does stress the transitory nature of the world. However, the Kural section on Adam or Dharma has two parts, one for the householder and the other for the renunciate. The chapter on Nilamai, impermanence of all things, is in the renunciate section and therefore is clearly an attitude for a renunciate, not for a householder. So sometimes these two dharmas get mixed up and you have householders who are following the renunciate dharma in some way. They think they should be poor and they think the world is illusion and they shouldn't be involved in it. But, well, that's fine, but they should be a monk if they want to do that. It's mixing up the dharmas, taking the goals of the sannyasin and trying to live them as a householder. So the wrong goals. Even sometimes in textbooks you see this. So whenever I go to a school, like I've been to KCC a few times, not in recent years, but I think two or three times over the years, I addressed that concept that there's this idea that Hindus all believe the world is illusion and therefore it's unimportant. So I explained that, you know, Hindus are just like anyone else. They're pursuing love and wealth. They're movie stars and, you know, they're just ordinary people. They're not different than you are. And try and get rid of that false concept that all Hindus are totally unworldly and think the world is illusion. That's just for renunciates. So there's a related quote here, which is a really good one. So usually when I explain moksha, I go to our lexicon, which has a twofold definition from Gurudeva, something like, moksha is achieved when all our karmas have been resolved and parashiva has been realized. Something like that is what our lexicon says. Beautiful definition. But there's another definition, which is equally beautiful, which relates to what we're talking about here. So it's threefold. Moksha comes when earthly karma has been resolved, dharma well performed. That's the point that the other one doesn't have. And God fully realized. So dharma well performed. Interesting idea. That we can't achieve moksha until we have performed dharma well. Which requires involvement in the world, right? How can you do your dharma if you're not actively engaged in the world? So Gurudeva explains what that means, dharma well performed. What does dharma well performed mean, Gurudeva? It means this. Each soul must have performed well through many lives the varna dharmas. Varna means caste. Or forecasts. And live through life's varied experiences in order to not be pulled back to physical birth by a deed left undone. All souls are destined to achieve moksha, but not necessarily in this life. Hindus know this and do not delude themselves that this life is the last. While seeking and attaining profound realizations, they know there is much to be done in fulfilling life's other goals, purusharthas, dharma, righteousness, artha, wealth, and kama, pleasure. So that's a really useful definition also of moksha. They're both good, equally good. But this one fits into what we're talking about, which is how do we look at the world? So I recently got a question from a married man. How old is he? Oh, he's probably 35, trying to get established. I think he's married. I think they may be both in a second marriage or something, so it's a little unstable. He's trying to pull it together, and he's asking me about moksha. He says, can householders achieve moksha? I said, oh, no, you know. Here we go. So I sent him the one on Videha Mukti, which was a pretty good answer initially, you know, which says, you know, everyone can achieve moksha at the point of death. It's called Videha Mukti. If their consciousness ends up in the right place and they've resolved things and settled their affairs and so forth, and the consciousness is high enough at that point, yes, moksha can be achieved. But I'm going to send him this one today because the point that he needs to focus on is dharma, fulfilling dharma. There he is, you know, with wife and child. And it's fine to think about moksha, but don't forget that it's fulfilling dharma and resolving karma along with achieving realizations of God. All three are necessary to achieve moksha. You can't just abandon your dharma and react to your karma. You know, the world is where our karma comes to us, and we need to not react when it comes and understand it when it comes, not retaliate, and in that way dissolve it. We need to fulfill our duties in whatever position we are in life, parent, spouse, relationship to the community, and so on. We all have all these duties which we need to strive to do well, and only in fulfilling dharma, resolving karma, and realizing God, when you have all three going, in the grahastha dharma, then you're on the right track. You know, you understand what it means to live a spiritual life. So it's a very useful statement there. Save that one in my special file, Gurudeva quotes. Find it. So we just went through some meditation classes, and they were purely meditation classes. There was no theism. Everything was monism. But, you know, our path is monistic theism. So when I say everything was monism, not theism, it means that theism means we're worshiping, which is what we do when we attend puja. We're separate from God. I am worshiping God Shiva, expressing my devotion. increasing my devotion, asking for Shiva's grace. That's our theism. Our monism is I'm meditating on my oneness with God Shiva, which is there if I can find it. You know, it's in the center of the soul. I just have to find the center of my soul, and then Shiva and I are always in oneness there. We don't have to become one with Shiva. That's not Gurudeva's teachings. Gurudeva's teachings is that the essence of the soul, which means Satchit Ananda and Parashiva, is always one with Shiva. We just aren't aware of it. If we can become aware of that area, then we're one with Shiva. So that's what we try and do in meditation, is first identify our awareness and then move it. First identify ourselves as awareness and then move ourselves as awareness into the essence of our soul. And lo and behold, we're one with Shiva. So that's what we are focusing on in our classes. So liking to balance all things out in the world, thought I should talk about the theism part of it, which is very important. In fact, it's a prerequisite. So this has to do with Murugan. So we have two quotes here. Sloka 24 from Dancing with Shiva. Lord Kartikeya, oh, and it was also a Skanda Shasti, so that's why I put the two things together. Meditation classes and Skanda Shasti equals this reading. Lord Kartikeya, Murugan, first guru and Pleiadian master of Kundalini Yoga, was born of God Shiva's mind. His dynamic power awakens spiritual cognition to propel souls onward in their evolution to Shiva's feet. Lord Arumugam, the six-faced, six-armed son of Shiva, wields many weapons as he battles the forces of darkness to end wars large and small. He rides the noble peacock, Mayil, which represents effulgent beauty and religion in its fullest glory. Basya, Lord Kartikeya flies through the mind's vast substance from planet to planet. So that sounds nice, but Gurudeva used to fly with him, which made it more interesting. Yeah. Gurudeva could do that too with Lord Murugan. He could, on the side, fly on your side. He could well be called the emancipator, ever available to the call of those in distress. Lord Kartikeya, God of will, direct cognition, and the purest childlike divine love, propels us onward on the righteous way through religion, his father's law. Majestically seated on the Manipura chakra, this scarlet-hued God blesses mankind and strengthens our will when we lift to the inner sky through sadhana and yoga. Next sentence is the important sentence. The yoga pada begins with the worship of him. The yogi locked in meditation venerates Kartikeya Skanda as his mind becomes as calm as Saravana, the lake of divine essence. The kundalini force within everyone is held and controlled by this powerful God, first among renunciates, dear to all sannyasins. Revered as Murugan in the south, he is commander-in-chief of the great Devanic army, fine dynamic soldier of the within, a fearless defender of righteousness. He is divinity emulated in form. The Vedas say, to such a one who has his stains wiped away, the venerable Sanak Kumara shows the further shore of darkness. Him they call Skanda. Om Namah Shivaya. So that introduces the idea, the yoga pada begins with the worship of him. What does that mean? Well, pada, of course, means the third stage, Charya, Kriya, Yoga, and Jnana. So the yoga pada, or the third stage of the practice of Saiva Siddhanta, requires some good theism, requires the blessings of Lord Murugan, which means we have to have devotion to Lord Murugan. So in Gurudeva's teachings, the two things aren't separate. In other words, we just don't meditate. To meditate deeply, which means the kundalini is active, we have to have the blessings of Lord Murugan. So our theism and our monism mix at that point. Our theism, devotional worship of Lord Murugan, impacts our monism, our ability to meditate deeply. So one more quote on that. I had the quote and I didn't know where it was from, so I looked it up. Google is wonderful. Find everything. in our own books. Go out on the World Wide Web, you come back in your own book. You know, it's very interesting. So it's in Merging with Shiva, Lesson 1. I said, oh, what an appropriate place, which is how to realize God. You know, the first lesson, how to realize God emerging with Shiva, has a similar quote, which is even more direct. To attain even the permission to perform yoga, one must have the grace of Lord Ganesha and the grace of Lord Murugan. Lord Murugan is the god of the Kundalini, of the advanced yoga practices. Unfoldment all happens within the Kundalini and the chakras within our subtle bodies. Once a profound relationship is developed with Lord Murugan, then, with the Guru's permission and guidance, true yoga may commence. Otherwise, no matter how long one sits in meditation, no matter how hard one tries, it is just sitting. It is just trying. There is no fire there, no shakti, no power, no change. It is the gods who control the fire. Fire means the Kundalini. It is the gods who control the fire, and at this stage help the devotee immensely, bringing him closer and closer to the supreme god, Shiva. Quite often the yogi in his deep internalized state may see and vision the feet or form of God Shiva before he begins to blend into the mind of God Shiva, called Satchit Ananda. It is God and gods in form that help us to find the formless God. So, once a profound relationship is developed with Lord Murugan, true yoga may commence. So that's our tradition. And that's why we pilgrimage to the six Murugan temples to deepen our relationship. Whatever it is, we can make it deeper with Lord Murugan. That's why we do puja to Lord Murugan twice a day. Festivals like the recent one. Skandashasti is an excellent time to develop, to deepen one's relationship with Lord Murugan toward greater profundity. Because it's 6 days long. It's not just one day. So you kind of get in a rhythm for 6 days, and you can do a discipline all 6 days. You know, so doing it for 6 days in a row has more benefit or more effect than simply doing something for one day. So it's a wonderful time to accomplish that. So that's my standard paragraph that I have saved. So the question that the paragraph is an answer to is, particularly to a monk, you know, says, well, my meditations aren't that deep. What can I do to deepen them? I pull out that paragraph. Say, here's the answer. You know, develop a profound relationship with Lord Murugan. Very simple. How do I do that? Well, do regular puja, learn some Murugan bhajans, learn some Murugan chants. You know, work at it on a daily basis to deepen it, and particularly during festivals, it's an excellent opportunity to receive blessings from Lord Murugan. In other words, we can express our devotion every day of the year. We can do that, but in terms of receiving blessings back, that happens better on the festival days. So, Skandashashti, Taipusam, Kasi Visakam, I believe are the three we celebrate here. So, those are excellent times for getting blessings from Murugan, because it's two-way. In other words, to develop a profound relationship, any relationship is two-sided, right? You can't have a relationship that's one-sided. If you've ever tried to make someone your friend and they don't respond, you don't get a relationship, right? Relationships are two-sided. You step forward, the other person has to step forward in order for a relationship to develop. So relationship with the deity is the same way. You step forward by doing puja, by chanting, so forth. But then Murugan has to step forward and bless you. So the best time for that is during festivals. And when you have both sides, then you have a relationship. And when the relationship gets deep enough, then you have a profound relationship. So let me read that sentence. It's our last thought. Once a profound relationship is developed with Lord Murugan, then, with the Guru's permission and guidance, true yoga may commence. So this is talking about deeper experiences. It's not talking about what we call the fourth dimension or the basic meditation practices. That just requires being able to detach awareness from consciousness to get into the fourth dimension and benefit. This is for deeper experiences, what we're talking about here, you know, like a really strong experience of the inner light or going even deeper than that. That's what it's talking about. But if we can detach awareness from consciousness, we can accomplish all the basic practices like Kamsachemni and so forth. But this is for a deeper experience. It requires a profound relationship.